CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarowski here. We're calling this Speech for Me Wednesday, and here's why. A fascinating article in today's Sun-Times. I also saw it in Block Club. Great article in Block Club as well. Block Club's been on a roll lately, ladies and gentlemen, on a tangent. Mick Dumke, shout out Mick Dumke. Really compelling reading, Mick Dumke, about a block in Humboldt Park. I wasn't even planning to talk about this. Mick's coming on the show to talk about it next week. And the violence on that block and the inability of the city as a whole to deal with the horrific violence and crime that's taking place in one block in Humboldt Park. And just gets out a lot about what's going on in Chicago with policing, et cetera, et cetera. All right, that's a tangent. I'm going back to the article that I read in the Sun-Times and on Block Club about the debate in the Chicago City Council over silencing anti-abortion protesters outside a clinic in the West Loop. The chief opponents in this debate are two alders, one Alderman Nick Sposato, shout out Nick, an old friend, and Alderman Bill Conway, who I've never met, but we make fun of a lot on this show. Anyway, Nick Sposato and I see eye to eye on pretty much nothing, but I've known him for a long time. So everybody knows I like Nick Sposato as a human being. So I don't agree with him at all on this one. Conway is pushing for legislation. Monroe Anders is sitting by. So Monroe, I'll throw the ball at you. Get ready. Conway is pursuing legislation that would essentially put a zone of silence outside of abortion clinics, meaning that anti-abortion protesters can't show up and yell and scream and bang on drums and try to intimidate women who are going to get abortions that they've been doing for many years. It would make it illegal to do that. Nick Sposato is championing the concept of free speech, and he's saying that infringing on the right of anti-abortion protesters to stand on the sidewalk and yell and harass women is a violation of their free speech. And I'm reading this debate, and I'm wondering, Nick, I don't think you actually believe that. I know you say that, but I don't think you actually believe that. And this actually gets into something that I was talking to producer Chris with before we went on mic. I'm not going to redo the whole conversation. It was a fascinating conversation. People saying something because they think it's what they're supposed to say and to reinforce their political, whatever political outlook they have. And then people, whether they believe it. So in this case, Alderman Nick Sposato fervently opposes abortion. Okay, he's made it clear. He's against abortion. And he wants to see it ended. All right. In that regards, an anti-abortion person stands on the sidewalks and screams and harasses women is helping him in that cause. So instead of saying, yes, I want them to stand there because it helps prevent abortion, what he says is it's a matter of free speech. He declares a principle. He declares that his act is rooted in a principle. But I don't believe you believe that, Nick. You don't believe that, what, pro-Palestinian activists have a right to camp out in the park and declare their support for a Palestinian state or for the end of the slaughter in Gaza? You don't believe in that. You think the police should go in and arrest everybody, get them off. It's not their land. No, I don't believe anybody believes anything that they say anymore, particularly when they say it's rooted in a principle. They just want it for them. They want to write for themselves. They want to write for anyone else. The concept of free speech is so wild. Supporters of the Palestinian protesters, they declare they have a free speech, a right of free speech to have their encampments, make their declarations. Haters of abortion declare they have a right to free speech to stand outside a clinic and scream at people. I don't believe one side supports the other side's free speech. Nobody believes in free speech as a universal principle. They just want free speech for themselves. That's my thoughts on the subject. I turn things over to the great Monroe Anderson for his learned response. Monroe?
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
What have a constitution lying around?
That's the constitution I just read to you.
I know. Would you have one lying around the house?
Yeah. No, but the Google machine and I are good for it. No, the point I'm making is it's government. It has nothing to do with individuals or groups getting any free speech rights. Unless it involves government. That's what the Constitution is about. What has happened over the years is that anybody who wants to have something to say claims that they have the right to say it because of the First Amendment. And that's not true. And I mean, and even those who would adopt that philosophy will agree that yelling fire in a crowded theater is not one of those free speech privileges.
All right. So I'll adopt what the issue to the Constitution. So when the city council, if they do, passes a law, passes an ordinance that prohibits anti-abortion zealots from standing outside a clinic, pounding a drum and yelling and screaming at women who were going to get an abortion, that's a government enforced infringement on their right to speech. That's what Nick Sposato would argue. And therefore it does.
That's crazy. That's what that is.
It's a government making a rule that prohibits somebody from standing on a corner and screaming at people.
Right. That's not, first of all, that's a noise pollution violation, not a freedom of speech. Because if they were yelling at women, give me some pussy, it still would be, if they had a loudspeaker and were yelling that instead of trying to intimidate them from going in and getting an abortion, it would still be not acceptable. That's what I say.
Well,
definitely not a right to make a lot of noise.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, Monroe, I remember, I guess it was back in the early 80s, seeing the anti-abortion zealots on the street corner yelling and screaming. And back then, I just thought, that's insane to allow this. It's like dangerous.
Right. It has nothing to do with government. When the Constitution says government and Congress shouldn't do this, it doesn't mean that it can't be done. It just means that the Congress can't do it.
Well, okay. I'm not going to head into the constitutional country. I don't even pretend to be a constitutional lawyer. I'm just talking from a practical, pragmatic way. This does not seem to be a civilized way to run a city. Okay. Having people going for a medical operation, a medical procedure, having people outside screaming at them. It wouldn't be tolerated in front of the same zealots who are doing that screaming would not want that screaming to be done to them.
Right.
So that's kind of a basic principle.
Do you remember back in the 80s, there was this black preacher who would be on State Street and he had a boom box.
Yes.
He'd be preaching whatever the hell he was talking about. Yes. It's just a disturbance. That's what it was.
But he stood there. He was there for years. Into the O's. Exactly. I think he was beyond the 80s, 90s O's. I could see the guy. As soon as you said that, I saw his face pop into my mind. Yeah. That, he had that little mega, it was like a little microphone he would talk into. Right. He was preaching his gospel, whatever it was. The police tolerated him. The city tolerated him. I mean, he wasn't wasn't directing his ire at women going into a clinic.
Right. Yeah, right. You had to come into his vicinity to hear him wherever he was. And you could hear him from a block away wherever he was.
All right. So now while we'll continue this discussion, then we'll put you in the spot with this one. What about the rights of pro-Palestinian protesters to go into a public way or to, in some cases, private property of a university in camp and preach their gospel, if you will, to protest the Israel's slaughter in Gaza? Do you believe they have the right to do that?
That's called civil disobedience. It was practiced widely during the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s. And what that entails is that if you believe so much in what you are breaking the law for, that you're willing to go to jail, have at it.
So, okay, there you go. So that follow-up sort of suggests that you agree that there will be a consequence for it.
Right.
So if you're willing to go to jail.
Right. There should be a consequence for it. Yeah. You'd be willing to accept that consequence.
So you're saying that, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I want you to say what you think. In other words, blocking access to a university building. Okay. Yeah. Or taking control of public space, or it's not even public, it's like private space in a university campus.
The University of UC, I don't think, is a private space.
It's public space? Okay.
Yeah, it's a public, taxpayers pay for that one.
All right, so you're saying that is inviting arrest?
It depends on the authorities. Some places, if that gathering was a Jesus gathering.
Yeah.
No arrests would be made. The Palestinians gatherings, now I'm talking about the pro-Palestinian gatherings. Mm-hmm. If that gathering was for Jesus, then no, there'd be no arrest. And there'd be no risk of an arrest. It's because they are voicing an opinion that many in America, particularly people of authority, don't back up, then they're in danger. Just like in the South in the 60s, those protesters, the freedom riders, all those, they were going against what was acceptable to the powers that be. The powers that be in the South wanted to maintain separate but equal, and it wasn't even equal, of course.
I'm trying to think if I can come up with an example, and at the moment I can't, to counter what you just said, where forces of the right have seized control of a public way and were allowed to stay there for, you know, days. I'm trying to think of an example, and I can't.
He had Governor Wallace standing in the doorway, and he had his state troopers or what have you protecting him, and then we had to bring in the National Guard and say, "Get the hell out of the way, jerk."
Well, there was rioting going on there. I mean, the white students were rioting at the prospect of a black student being admission. Right. They rioted.
Right. Okay. Except because it was white people, it wasn't a riot.
That is correct. It was civil disobedience.
I don't know what they were called.
Who knows? We talked yesterday with Stacey Davis Gates about that scene, which has stayed with me for a long time, of the protest in Mississippi. And I said, man, if you're a pro-Palestinian protester in Mississippi, you got a lot of guts, man. And I just say that with all sincerity. So all these Trump frat boy types showed up and started chanting Trump, 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 letting the whole world know where Trump stands on Palestinian protesters.
Right.
And where MAGA stands on it. Right. And did you see this one where a black woman approached them and they began shouting at her and doing monkey chants and just displaying all the racism that they could conjure?
Right.
You know,
I'm shocked.
Yeah. Now, MAGA would argue that those frat boys had a right to chant those racist chants at that black woman. They would argue they have a right. That's wouldn't MAGA say that?
Yes, they would.
But MAGA would also say those pro-Palestinian protesters do not have a right to be on. So MAGA doesn't believe in what you just read, Monroe.
Right.
It's selective. Am I correct?
No, they don't understand it. What they do is they go to freedom of speech as a default position when they want to say things that are screwed up and racist and misogynistic, anti-gay, all the hatred they hold near and dear to their hearts.
Yeah. No, I listen. I remember, about 10 years ago, what a different world, when the University of Chicago was very proud. They had this declaration about free speech, their dedication to free speech. And they were not going to protect the sensitivities of students who were offended by what they may hear from opposing views. Remember this, Monroe? It was about 10 years ago, I want to say, something like that. I've lost track of time.
Maybe a little more.
Oh, my God, the Tribune, the Sun, all editorialized. Yeah, this is correct. Children today are getting soft and they're weak and they can't handle opposing views. And sometimes you're going to hear things in the world that'll make you feel, offended, but you got to be tough and you got to respond. So here we are 10 years later. And it's like, lock them up. I don't like what they're saying.
Right.
Wait a minute. I thought they were supposed to be tough. I thought we were supposed to be.
Yeah. You know, and in my watching what's been going on, everybody talks about Jewish students being in danger. I have not, I may have missed it, but I haven't heard of any incidents where a Jewish student was injured, seriously injured from in these crowds. And you have some haters in the crowds also, though. People who are anti-Semitic, but the gatherings have been more in defense of the Palestinians, not let's go kill some Jews.
All right. So, as with any protest movement, there's a range of thoughts and views.
Right. Exactly.
And there's some hardcore extreme leftists who take the position, and I've argued with a few of them, that the Israelis are living in land that they stole. And as a result, any attack against the Israelis is an act of war, and it can't be condemned because it's an act of war. That's just the Israelis are a provocation. This is resistance. And so be it. Now, I don't come even anywhere near that.
Right.
That's to me. Oh, so then it was 9/11 is justified, huh? And then usually you get a version of habada habada, huh? Because there's no response to that. Okay. But that's the hardcore.
Right. Or
that's the hardcore extreme view. And Monroe, I would not say that I would say that's the extreme view of the protesters who were there. There are other protesters who are there who say, we need a ceasefire now. We have to stop this slaughter now. And then the conversation begins, the negotiations begin about what will, whether it should be a two-state solution, some kind of United States solution, whatever. That's where the conversations begin. But we have to stop the slaughter now.
Right.
Yeah, so you get what I'm saying, Monroe? I wouldn't.
The protests are about stopping the slaughter. You know, it boils down to Hamas killed our children, so we're killing Palestinian children.
Wait, you mixed me up there. You're talking about which protesters are you talking about who believe
that? Talking about the protests that are going on at college campuses now. They're protesting the killing of women and children, innocent people, that the Israelis are doing.
Yes.
With their forces.
Yes.
And their point is that let's not kill the babies.
I think that's a valid point.
Right, exactly. I mean, exactly.
It's such a valid point. And I also agree with the point you were making before. And we've talked about this endlessly. And I think Americans are hypocritical on this point. After 9/11, there was a cry in this country for vengeance. And anybody who stood up to that cry was marginalized at best. In fact, there were some songs. There was radio stations that wouldn't allow playing John Lennon's Imagine in the aftermath of 9/11 because they thought that was too pro-peace. Remember that, Monroe? I'm like, it was like vengeance, vengeance, vengeance. And I believe we talked about as soon as October 7th happened, the horrific slaughter. I go, you watch, Monroe, there's going to be vengeance like you've never seen.
Right.
And you were saying, you're right. We were both talking about that. And how many months is it later? And we're still seeing it.
Right. And the people who are saying what we're saying are being accused of being anti-Semitic.
Yeah, it's a broad brush that's being used and applied. And so what that has to do with the principle of free speech. Do you follow me, Monroe? So the people who think that anti-abortion zealots have a right to scream at women going to a clinic, have a free speech right to do that, are the same people who don't think protesters have a right to have encampments.
Yeah, it's basically my free speech is better than your free speech.
That's what I'm saying. Free speech for me.
Right.
Not for thee.
Right.
And I'm trying to, I don't even believe in, I'm not a free speech zealot. I don't think you are either. For instance, all right, we'll go. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to put him on the spot. He doesn't know this is coming. This curveball is coming. Monroe Anderson does not know what's about to come at the plate. We're going to go back in time, millennials. 1989. I think, or maybe it was 88. Eugene Sawyer was the mayor of the city of Chicago. Monroe Anderson was Eugene Sawyer's press secretary. There was a very controversial, to put it mildly, painting of former Mayor Harold Washington in panties that was displayed at an art show at the Art Institute. Several black aldermen got enraged by that. They said it was mocking the late mayor, and people were still upset about his death. And they marched to the Art Institute, and they took it off the wall. I think it was Bobby Rush, right? Am I right about that? Bobby Rush was one of the aldermen who did that. And
I can't remember. They were all, Dorothy Tillman was one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, my memory's a little murky in that, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. I'm talking about events that are almost, they're over 30 years old. So Monroe, in your humble opinion, did the Art Institute have a right to hang that painting that mocked Harold Washington, or were the protesting aldermen correct in saying it should be taken down? Go ahead.
It's an automatic tradition in Chicago to be incorrect. they were just being traditionalists.
They were being, what was the last word you said? I was laughing. I couldn't hear.
Being traditionalists. They were simply being traditionalists.
Did you talk to Niels Alderman at the time and go, what are you doing?
No, I couldn't. I was press secretary to the mayor. And it was my screw up, actually, because that morning when I came in to my office, one of my secretaries told me about that there was this painting of Harold in underwear at the Art Institute. And she said it very indignantly, my being married to an artist. My feeling was, so what's the big deal? So what? And so I go in. Shortly thereafter, all hell breaks loose at the Art Institute. And I mentioned to Mayor Sawyer, I said, oh, they told me about that. He said, you should have told me. I could have called the Art Institute and asked them not to have it up.
Do you think the Art Institute would have taken it down with just one phone call?
From the mayor, possibly.
Possibly. Then you get in the issue of, is that a violation of the First Amendment? That would be an alleged infringement where you have the government, represented by the mayor, calling up the Art Institute and saying, please take that painting down. I presume we put a please in front of the request. knowing you, sorry, I do.
Did you listen to that amendment I read to you?
Yeah, I heard it. It was about government infringement.
No. It said Congress.
Ah, man, you are, tell you what. If I'm in trouble, I'm calling Monroe up to be my lawyer, okay?
Congress was not involved in that exchange.
I see. It was just the mayor. Yeah,
right.
So the mayor has the right to infringe on
Congress, right. Now, the reason this was written in 1776 or whatever back then, it was written because of King George. And there was a response to him being in charge, the head of the government being in charge of what the countrymen could do. Well, mainly property white men. But we won't go into that part.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Right, exactly.
And by the way, Declaration of Independence, 1776. I would say the Constitution is 17. Oh, God. It's been a while since I had to take the test and I passed it.
79.
89, I want to say. All right. Anyway. I want to say 89. But, you know, I'm not bragging or anything, Monroe, but I passed the Constitution test. It's a requirement in the state of Illinois to get that all important high school diploma. And as a young scholar at Evanston High School.
Yeah, well, I may or may not have.
I don't know if they had that law in Indiana.
They may not. That's what I'm saying. They may or may not have.
Yeah. All right.
For me, it was 60 years ago, so I don't remember anyway.
We have a lot of Trump and Biden conversation to have, so I'm going to move away from this specific topic, but we'll get to Stormy and the Stormy Daniels and the hush money trial. Monroe has been following that one very carefully.
And the right wing is speaking of free speech and what have you. The MAGAites in Georgia are still trying to get rid of
Fannie Willis.
Yeah.
Wow. That is, we were talking about that before we did the show today. So there are four cases against Trump. Three of them are on hold right now. There's the case in Georgia, the Georgia case against Trump for trying to steal the election, which is on hold while the Trumpsters appeal the decision that allows Fannie Willis to remain as prosecutor. So they're going to drag that baby out for as long as they can. Then there's the case in Florida. I can't believe I know this by heart, where Judge Cannon, the Trump appointee who's bending over backwards to be Trump's cheerleader, has just basically called a halt to that case just like indefinitely while they sort through the various protestations of Trump. And then there's the case of insurrection in Washington, which is on hold. While the Supremes talk about bending over backwards, debate whether Trump is immune from any prosecution. Wow. As a president, is immune from any prosecution, including insurrection. What a wild man, law and order types. Monroe is so, it's so, why you talk about lack of principle? They're all upset because some protester is in the park and yet Trump gets to weigh his right to insurrection, man. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I had a guest on earlier today, Monroe, and he was preaching tolerance. Okay, we were talking about Kristi Noem and the and her obsession with killing puppies, and he said he was preaching tolerance and respect for the other side. And I'm like, where is the tolerance ever coming from MAGA? Where's the consistency of principle that we could join on? Go ahead.
Exactly. No, and also this is, you know, it's okay to beat the living daylights out of Capitol Hill policemen protecting a Capitol. It's okay to do that. But then if somebody so much as strikes a cop trying to arrest them, then it's okay for the police to shoot them dead if they choose to. It's, I mean, the hypocrisy is just incredible.
Yeah. And I would, Monroe, we didn't talk about this. I don't think we did. We've had so many conversations, maybe we did. But Trump, in his speech last week, saying he believes in immunity for police officers in any matter.
Right.
So that would mean like those cops that killed George Floyd would be immune from prosecution under Trump.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. You know, and I believe that's going to get him traction with American voters.
Fortunately, he's preaching to the choir. These are people who believe what he believes and are going to vote for him regardless.
Okay. Well, let me play devil's advocate with you on that. And as you know, Monroe is America's foremost authority on white people. And as such, he hangs out with a bunch of them. You go to this luncheon where a bunch of mostly white liberals, I think it is. Don't you think they'll be sympathetic to Trump on this point? Those guys that you have that luncheon with, don't you think they'll be, well, you know, Monroe, you got to crack down on crime. And don't you think they'll say that to you? You know, Trump's got a point. Haven't you ever heard a white liberal tell you that? Trump's got a point.
Yeah, they don't. They're about six people in the Lundy lunch out of 50 that say that.
Are they white liberals?
Yeah. No, they're Republicans. They're right. They're Republicans who brace themselves when they say it.
Well, you know, Trump's got a point.
Right, exactly.
I hope the right wingers that lately the white right wingers.
Most of the Republicans, not all of them, but out of the five or six or seven Republicans at that luncheon, most of them are more like mid Republicans.
Okay.
They are Republicans, but they would be called rhinos.
Yeah.
At a MAGA rally.
Speaking of which, before we went on the mic, I saw that Paul Ryan, the former House Speaker, Mitt Romney's former running mate, announced he would not vote for Trump. He'd vote for Biden.
Yeah.
Which.
It's just going to be more as time goes by, we're going to get more and more of that.
I hope you're right.
Well, it'll ring true because there are a lot of Republicans out there that hate Trump.
All right.
Look at Michigan and the vote there.
Yeah. So, I live in lefty land. I live in a lefty bubble. I don't know. So many of the people surround me with, they openly despise Joe Biden. They declare proudly they're not going to vote for Joe Biden. And I realize, Monroe, I live in lefty land. I live in that lefty bubble. And I long ago realized that it does not represent the views of the vast majority of Americans. You, on the other hand, it seems like you live in a world where there's more diversity of thought. You go ahead.
Yeah, not a lot more.
Well,
it's more diversity of expression. It's like, well, there is too much crime in the city.
No, what I'm saying is, go ahead.
No, what I'm saying is, it's there are some limousine liberals around, but they ain't that liberal.
Well, what I'm saying is, do you encounter, in your opinion, is that view that, but for the lefties that I meet that say they're not going to vote for Biden, so widespread that it'll guarantee Donald Trump's victory?
I don't think that would happen in Lincoln Park. My next door neighbor is very conservative. Mm-hmm. He hates Trump. He's a very conservative businessman, rich businessman, but he hates Trump, and he's a Republican.
Does he hate him so much? He's going to vote for Biden.
I haven't heard him say that. Okay. He's not going to vote for Trump.
I mean,
oh, he's not going to vote at all, or he'll vote for Ben Jarofsky.
He's not going to vote for me. That's for sure. He's not going to vote for me. I don't know. We got to get closer to the election before I see the fallout over Israel and Palestine, and ultimately how that plays out.
Now, what you have to look at, I was about to say this and get it out completely, but if you look, Nikki Haley got almost 20% of the Republican vote in Michigan, and she wasn't on the ballot.
Yeah.
Those are the Republicans that don't support Trump, and they don't support him so much. They'd rather vote for none of the above.
Well, in this last week, I saw declarations. Michael Rappaport, who is pretty much a lunatic and is a celebrity, used to go on his Instagram feed denouncing Trump, announced that he was never going to vote for Biden. He was probably going to vote for Trump. And the main motivating issue is apparently Biden has not been supportive enough for Israel, which is just a mind-boggling statement.
Right.
But I think it's just hatred of the protesters in the park. And so when someone like Rappaport sees frat boys show up in Mississippi and chant Trump, 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 they're like, oh, yeah, they're with me on this one. I'm going with them. And then some rapper, Macklemore, I have to admit, I don't follow rap, so I apologize to listeners. I don't really know anything about Macklemore, but I just saw his video where denouncing the slaughter in Gaza and saying there's blood on Biden's hands and he was never going to vote for Biden. So I'm like, well, okay, you got Rappaport, who voted for Biden in 2020, saying he's going to vote for Trump, and you got Macklemore, who Lord knows if he even voted, saying he's not going to vote for Biden, and that sort of that personifies Monroe, the situation regarding Biden. Follow me?
It's such a mess we have right now. Biden represents what he not only does he represent what this country stands for, and he could be the poster grandpa for it, as a matter of fact. And Trump is just the opposite of that. And so anybody who really claims to be an American, and somebody for all the values that the Constitution expresses, and still votes for Trump is either dishonest or stupid.
Or both.
Yeah, or both.
So let's get to the Stormy Daniels trial.
It could be true at one time, but a dishonest and stupid. Okay.
Yeah. Stormy Daniels trial, as we go on, I believe she was still maybe on the stand as we do this recording, or they may have been taking a break. I haven't been following it today. I'm doing a lot of recording. Wow. Stormy Daniels, that testimony. The irony of all this is that Trump in 2016 was paying her off to silence her. And now in 2024, this country has moved so far away from normalcy that he is putting a spotlight on it in many ways because he thinks it's going to help him win the election, that that his prosecution on this matter will help him win. And even as he declares that he didn't have the one night stand, which is such a declaration, Monroe, that of no one believes. This is what I'm saying. I was talking to Chris about this. People say things and I don't believe they think it on both sides of the aisle, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that MAGA people truly believe that Trump is quote unquote innocent in this affair. Your thoughts on this?
They don't care. That's basically what it is they don't care. They like Trump. First of all, because he put the three Supremes on the court. And therefore, abortion is no longer legal in all the South and other places as well. He'll be their champion forever, just for that alone. Wow. And then, of course, because he's a racist, a white supremacist, that increases his status a great deal. And, you know, because when they talk about they're going to vote for him because of what a great job he did as president, the things he did as president, he raised the taxes, lowered the taxes for rich people and corporations. He made it possible for Dobbs to happen. And he's a racist. You know, he didn't build the border, the wall. He didn't build the wall. The Mexicans didn't pay for it, but he's getting some kind of credit for that. Biden's economic budget is so much better than Trump's that if you're making a sports analogy, Trump's would be junior varsity, and Biden's would be world champion. Mm. But they're giving Biden credit for having the better economy. I mean, it's just, he's their guy. Mm. He expresses what they want expressed. He either tries to do or does what they want done. And that's good enough for them.
Well, I have to say, as an old timer looking back, this country is completely brainwashed, and there's just no way under normal circumstances that governed politics for most of my adult lifetime that this would be anything but a complete and total landslide victory for Joe Biden.
Right.
And you have a president so corrupt. You have a presidential candidate, I should say, so corrupt.
He wouldn't be the candidate.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the candidate.
He would not be the candidate. It'd be somebody bland and boring. It'd be Pence, probably.
Pence, I don't know. He may be too extreme on the abortion issue for the Republican Party. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Trump's vice presidential candidate. It's been on my mind. And as I said, I did a whole recording today, which drops this weekend, with Jeff Jenkins, who's a dog trainer, talking about Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota and her assertions that she killed her puppy, her 14-month-old puppy, because the puppy was essentially disobedient. Having analyzed her story.
Yeah, she said the puppy was untrainable.
Untrainable, yeah. So yeah. She found it. And I'm not sure I believe her story. It sounds like something she made up in order to win over MAGA, thinking I have to show them that I'm so extreme that I could kill a puppy, put a gun, yeah, and then a billy goat, and then a couple of horses, et cetera, and so forth. Putting aside whether or not it's true, do you think it enhances her stature with Donald Trump telling that tale? Go ahead.
Yeah, I do. I do. Mainly because she's also backs him, which is important. Mainly because she backs him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he cares about a dog one way or another. Trump doesn't. And in fact, they're using... she said that Biden should have killed his dog. That's attacked a couple of dozen of Secret Service agents. And of course, the difference is that whatever Biden's man-eater dog's name is, I've forgotten. But anyway, he's in Delaware. He's not in the White House.
Yeah, it got him out of the White House.
Yeah, they got him out of the White House, but they didn't shoot him.
Yeah. Or Commander. Isn't that the dog's name? Commander?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, the reality is some animals, dogs and cats and what have you, have to be put to sleep, as the saying goes. But that's because there are too many of them, and there's no one willing to take care of them. And I'm just grateful that we don't have that same policy with unadopted black children.
Yes. I think we can all, I'm really glad we don't have that policy as well. You caught me off guard with that one, but yes, I share your opinion.
Because being America's foremost authority on white people, yes. The reality is white people like dogs better than they do unadopted black children.
All right, so let's go and take a deeper dive into that comment. Do you think white people, by and large, like dogs better than they like black people?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Eddie is America's foremost authority, so it must be true. If Monroe says it.
So they dress them up, dogs. They buy cute little expensive outfits.
Yeah, finish this. You're on your own here. Go ahead.
They have special food that they buy for dogs that need to be refrigerated.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, have you ever owned a dog?
When I was a kid.
When you were a kid?
I mean, like 7 years old, I had a dog.
Yeah.
I loved the dog. His name was Frisky.
Frisky? Okay. Yeah.
He's a Cairn Terrier.
I love dogs too, Monroe. I just want to get that on the record. I'm a dog lover. I do not currently have a dog because we go to Canada.
I've ceased to love dogs since I own property on a corner.
Oh my
God. Parkway and the dock owners.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I had a friend. By the way, there are some people who love their lawns more than they like dogs.
Yeah.
There are some people who love their lawns more than they love people who walk dogs. Okay.
Right.
Human beings are a very strange creature. All right. It's people who love their lawns a little too much, I might say, Monroe. Okay. A little too much.
Right.
You got people. I go for walks all over the place. There's signs. You know, keep your dog off my lawn. You know, it's not a public potty. And there's a picture of a dog lifting its leg if it's peeing with a X through it. I'm like,
right.
Do you think this little sign enhances what your property looks like? I mean, it's kind of an ugly sign, you know? I mean, so what's worse, the dog peeing on your lawn or the sign?
Well, first of all, it doesn't stop with number one. Sometimes it's number two.
Well, there's people who oppose the number one. I remember one time when I had a dog, walking a dog, and this guy was yelling at me when my dog was relieving herself on his lawn.
Right.
I remember him saying to me, I pay property taxes. And I'm like, what the? I pay property taxes too. What? I don't know what the point is, you know?
Well, so I have resided my parkway over the years.
Yeah.
Three or four times. And the dog walkers that let their dog go on the sodded lawn helps result in it ending up a weedy dirt patch. In fact, one time this guy was out there letting his dog go on the new sod, and he was joking to his friend about it. Only the finest grass for his dog.
You heard him say that?
Yes, he said it to his friend. And the advantage of being black in the white land, mm-hmm, is you don't count. You're invisible. So, you know, they can't imagine that a black man actually owns a house.
Did you respond to the guy?
No.
Let it go. Probably just as well.
The only time I responded to an infraction in my parkway.
Yeah.
It was about 10, 11 o'clock at night, and this guy was relieving himself on my tree in the parkway.
And so what'd you say?
I said, this is not a public
here. Oh, my God.
There's a bar that you just came from right there on the corner. You go back there.
Yeah, no, that human beings, like I said. All right, we're going to close with this. You said something to me before we went on the mic, and I'd love to respond. It was a really good point. All right, so you were comparing, contrasting the protesters in 1968 took to the streets to protest the war in Vietnam, and the protesters who have, taken to the streets in, 2024 to protest the carnage in Gaza. And he said that back in 68, the protesters had skin in the game.
Right.
Why don't you riff on that a little bit, what you meant by that? Go ahead.
Yeah, what I meant was they were protesting the war because they were at risk of having to go over there and fight in it and die in it. Whereas what these protesters are doing today is an ideological battle. But it really doesn't impact most of them greatly. Now, there are some Palestinian Americans out there in those camps, some of whom who have family back in Gaza or who are from Gaza. And obviously, they are more invested in what happens than those with the ideological battle going on. But as a result of this, I'm not so sure of that reality. I'm not so sure it's going to impact the election as much as 68 did, where everybody was upset with the Democrats for staying in the war, so they voted against the happy warrior.
Hubert Humphrey, yeah. Well, that was a very good point, and I'm going to be thinking about that a lot. My position has always been that one of the greatest movements Nixon made to undercut the left in this country was to end the draft.
Yeah.
The practical reality of that is as soon as the threat of the draft is, and this coincides with what you're saying, as soon as the threat of the draft was gone, a lot of those protesters drifted right and they're voting for Reagan.
Right.
Which is astounding to me how that happened in just 7-8.
They cut their hair, took their sandals off.
Yeah.
And started looking like their fathers.
Right. And acting like him.
And the yippies became the yuppies.
Yeah, the yippies became the yuppies, man. I know some of you lefties on there. No, not me, Ben, not me. Yeah, I know a few of you stayed true to your cause and your beliefs, but most of your generation didn't. Don't you agree with me on that point, Monroe?
Oh, yeah, right. Now, back in 68, when I was hanging out with the black nationalists, that's what they say. When these white liberals get older, they're gonna do a 180-degree turn on us. And they did.
Yeah, they did. And now they're voting for Trump, some of them. Some of them,
Monroe. But those are the people who probably those are the same people who voted for Bernie Upton, became Republicans overnight.
And
there's been this whole musical chair thing going on with Democrats and Republicans.
No, they've and they always say it's not racial. So they voted for Bernie Upton over Harold Washington.
Right.
They voted for Eddie Verdoliak over Harold Washington. They voted. And then as soon as Richard Daley was the mayor, I'll vote for him. But it has nothing to do with race.
Right.
Richard Daley was a Democrat.
Right.
Suddenly Republicans didn't have a chance. Suddenly Chicago went back to being a city that only elects Democratic mayors.
Right.
race had nothing to do with it.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of them moved out of the city.
Or as you pointed out a couple of weeks ago, they were very upset by Harold Washington not paying his taxes.
Right.
And now they're supporting Trump, who's been convicted of business fraud.
It's okay.
It's okay. Well, yeah. It's okay. We're closing where we began. Rules for thee, not for me. I think that's an established principle in America today, but particularly so on the MAGA side of the aisle. All right, Monroe, we'll let you go. And both of us have got to get back to that Stormy trial. And I'm really waiting.
It's not today, Ben. Today, the court is closed.
Yeah, but I mean, just in general.
Michael
Cohen will be testifying, so I'm sure by next. I don't know. It's going kind of slow. So
she'll be done by tomorrow.
She'll be done by tomorrow, and then I think Cohen comes next, or are there going to be other?
They haven't told us.
They haven't told us. Okay.
They haven't told us that they're not going to save him for last, because he has so much baggage and. That could work against the people. So they're going to have him before last and then bring in somebody to give the jurors time to remember what a sleazebag when he was working for Trump.
Listen, now,
Trump's greatest mistake.
Yeah.
It should be on his grave. You should have brought Cohen to the White House.
That's what Del Marie said about Brannon and biggest mistake, or no, Lori Lightfoot's biggest mistake. She should have given Anthony Beal, Alderman Anthony Beal, a committee chair. You get what I'm saying? So what you're really saying is that people don't have a principled opposition. They just have grudges.
Well, some people have grudges. Yeah, I mean, that they work out. It depends. Some people are really, really grudge fanatics, and others like live and let live. I mean, there are varying degrees on this. But Trump obviously is very vengeful, and Michael really, really he had done all Trump's dirty work as his fixer.
Yeah.
And he thought he was Trump's man. And for reasons that have never been explained to me, or I've seen an explanation, Trump didn't invite him to come work there.
Right, man.
You know, and a good politician, this is the thing, is a really good politician figures out ways to incorporate people to keep them happy where they won't cause them a problem. And Trump is not a good politician.
Well, he certainly turned Michael Cohen into a problem. That's for certain.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, no. Because, if it hadn't been for Mike and Michael, Trump wouldn't be on trial right now.
On two trials. Basically, the business fraud trial stems from Michael Cohen and the Stormy Daniels trial. And Cohen has already paid a price for the Stormy. Cohen did jail time, ladies and gentlemen, prison time.
Yeah,
his role in the hush money situation. So, I'm sure that's on his mind as he gets ready to testify against Trump. All right, we have run out of time. Monroe, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week. All right.
Okay.
Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And Monroe agrees with when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Ben Jarofsky shows available at your leisure at chicagoreader.com. Follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends, like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.